Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here I am. I am the happiest person who ever put on a jean jacket today. Yes, I switched my stuff out of my winter coat. Is this going to cause another blizzard? I don't know, but it feels so light. It's light to just run around. Isn't that joyful? All right, so we have some very good guests on the show today. We're going to be talking about kind of one of the eternal problems of food, right? How do you make everyday foods? How do you make them new? How do you keep the same chicken leg quarters? How do you keep them fresh and interesting? I have Justin Chappell, first off. He's got a book called Just Cook It. He's made a little bit of a sensation making some videos up on that internet for Food & Wine magazine, and it's interesting. Nobody really talks about how the internet is sort of changing home cooking, and I think Justin Chappell is the person to talk to about this. Later on, we're going to have the wonderful Jennifer Siegel of Once Upon a Chef, and she's kind of coming at things from a different direction, but I'm excited to just kind of get a lay of the land about how cooking is keeping fresh, keeping it modern. Because everybody knows you go into the kitchen for the 75 millionth time. Like, where do you get that spark and that fire? You get it from people that are doing this professionally, such as Justin Chappell. So, Justin, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. So people who don't know you, I want to kind of back up a little bit. Tell me about you. Tell me about growing up. You're from California.
I am. I grew up in the Central Valley of California, which, if you're unfamiliar with, is packed with farmland and vineyards. And so we had, growing up, I had quite a bit of access to fresh ingredients, but still kind of everyday ingredients that people are using, that people pick up at the grocery store every day.
And you weren't like in a fancy millionaire kitchen. You grew up in a big family.
Oh, yeah. I grew up with, oh, my gosh, I can't even count how many kids there were growing up. But, yeah, I grew up in with six siblings. So and, of course, we're all grown now. And so many of my sisters have multiple kids, so our family's gotten even bigger, but definitely not a $1 million house, definitely not a mansion. So we did with food what we could, and I think that's where my inventing cooking kind of started. My grandma, who took, anything from packaged ramen to just straight up eggs out of the shell and did really fantastic things with them.
Yeah, you have some great anecdotes in your book about, your grandma being able to kind of take some, just the 29-cent block ramen and work a little magic, and all of a sudden it's dinner for kids.
Oh, yeah, totally. She would, she would take those little packages and she'd put them in a bowl with some broth and some egg and a little bit of thinly sliced scallion, maybe some hot sauce, and she would pop it right in the microwave, and it came out as this whole kind of brand new thing to me as a kid. And then it's funny because years later, I live in New York City now, and you can go to many of the ramen shops throughout the city, and you can spend upwards of $20-25 on a bowl of this.
Yeah, it's funny that way that has spun. It's been, but I think that one of the things I like about your book and your approach to food is that you come into, the true American vernacular cuisine. Like, what we eat is what's at grocery stores, what's affordable, like what can get done in a reasonable amount of time. I will say the recipe that most endeared you to me from a distance in your book is the cornflake chicken, because that's so, like, that's real American food, right?
It is. And, I put that in the book because it was something that I kind of grew up eating. And I didn't, I guess it's me being a little naive, but I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to introduce people to this cornflake chicken. And then, for many of the people who have gotten my book already, they're like, oh my gosh, I ate this growing up.
Yeah. And,
I think the twist to it that kind of I introduce in the book is it's a riff on a recipe that I do every now and then called stick of butter chicken, which basically what you do, the technique is you put a stick of butter into an oven-proof baking dish and you throw it in the oven until it's melted. And then you add the cornflake-coated chicken to that, mm-hmm. and you pop it in the oven, and then you turn it once or twice during baking. And what you're essentially doing is you're kind of frying the chicken in butter, which is not as because the chicken doesn't really absorb all that butter, but it gives you this really nutty and really kind of delicious crust on just chicken legs and chicken thighs.
Yeah, and so talk to me about that process. So you've become kind of famous for making internet food videos, and I think that people probably don't realize how much trial and error goes in the back end to making these things look kind of like a, oh, it just happened really fast for no particular reason. So let's talk about making food in this kind of new internet moment. Like, how do you, you know, things that you have to think about? I think we're all so familiar with the history of the, you know, dump and stir, which was, you know, all through the 90s. You have Friendly Face and everything's always chopped up and in little glass bowls and you throw it together. But you do something different.
Yeah, so one of the things I'm kind of known for are these Mad Genius tips that I've created for Food & Wine magazine. So I've been at Food & Wine magazine now for over 8 years, actually. And along the way, I've tested and developed thousands of recipes for everyday people. And so the Mad Genius tips are all about finding a new, inventive, kind of really creative way of preparing or preparing ingredients for cooking, or just offering a shortcut or trick to making something fresh and fun. And it's a little bit different than some of the other kind of how-to videos that are out there, because they, like you said, you kind of have your mise en place, everything's in little glass bowls, whereas this is, I take the raw ingredients and I show you a simpler way of getting it into that bowl. And that's some of the stuff that I kind of also offer in my new book, Just Cook It. For example, I teach you that with just two bowls, you can cut the kernels off corn very easily. Mm-hmm. Rather than buying, you know, one of these kind of one-trick pony corn cutters that you can see every now and then that strip the corn. But you can do it with stuff that's in your kitchen. So
yeah, I am the enemy of the overstocked kitchen. Like, I can't take a bazillion gadgets that require space and gather dust and cost money. I hate that whole thing. Like, I like to have as few.
who does like that?
Oh, a lot of kitchenware stores seem to, I think. It's just constantly like, oh, you cannot possibly get by without, I don't know.
Without this new single-use item.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I teach you to do a lot more with less, and that's one of the things I love about my new book is it actually provides a really great service to whoever buys it.
Yeah, I put a couple of links to some of your past work so people can get a sense of it up on our new snazzy website, which is we're almost back to our WCCO.com menu route. But you came up with this recipe a while ago, I guess. It was a chicken quarters on bread with charred lemons. And I just loved it so much because it works out so great. You put the bread at the bottom of the pan and then the juice goes into it and then it gets crisp. And you're like, oh, it's like stuffing, but in a second.
Yeah, I actually do a riff of that in my new book. It's funny because I call it my Just Cook It chicken. That's not the name in the recipe, but whenever I talk about it, I'm like, oh, that's the Just Cook It chicken, because literally you're not overthinking the recipe. It's not a lot of work. It's not complicated. If you make a mistake, it's a super forgiving recipe, which is why I call it Just Cook It, because it's only food, so you just cook it. But in my new book, it's called Roasted Chicken Legs with Sourdough Bread and Poblanos.
Oh, I was looking at that. I'm looking at it right now. It's beautiful.
It is literally one of my favorite recipes in the whole book because, like you said, you just tear up some bread, some sourdough bread. You throw it on a baking sheet or a cookie sheet with some sliced peppers and some onions and some herbs. And then you put the chicken on top. And as the chicken roasts, the chicken juices and the chicken fat gets absorbed by the bread and the vegetables. And you almost get like a panzanella, like a bread salad, like a warm one. that you eat with the chicken legs. And it is literally, it's the perfect one pan meal. It's the perfect sheet pan meal. But the twist is that bread, because it really, it does absorb all that flavor and a little bit. It's a little chewy. It's a little crunchy. It's a crowd pleaser for sure.
And I like it because it's thrifty. You're using up bread. It's, you know, very, as a working mom, it's fits into my lifestyle of get things, you know, wholesome things done fast and at a reasonable amount of.
Yeah. And it's really forgiving, because you can learn this recipe and then use the technique over and over and over again with whatever you have in the refrigerator. And that's one of the most amazing things about it.
And then I think this kind of gets to the heart of what I wanted to talk to you about, is that, you know, so you have, you know, you're kind of the new face of cooking on the internet, right? You really have thought a lot about this. You've made it very accessible. But, you know, the questions that you know, come to today's cook, those are the exact same things that your grandmother was dealing with. You know, it's how do you get good food on the table that you can afford to do for this family, you know, in a reasonable amount of time. And so, but what you're doing is you're coming to it with a fresh take.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm trying to teach people. So, you know, as I just mentioned, I've been at Food & Wine for 8 years. And over that time, you know, I've cooked food. I've tested recipes for some of the most, you know, incredible chefs across the United States. Chefs like Thomas Keller, David Chang. I mean, these names.
I find that very crazy, because I've interviewed Thomas Keller a few times. It is like interviewing a head at Easter Island. Like, he's so important and grave and, you know, he's amazing. But, you know, the thought of, like, taking his recipes that are so precise and then making them for people like me, like, that's just nuts.
It's difficult. And, you know, but that's what I've done for 8 years. I've taken chef's recipes and I've simplified them so that people can make them at home. And so I've learned a lot. I've learned all the tricks of the trade. I've learned when it's necessary to strain soup and when it's not. I've learned when it's necessary to peel a vegetable and when it's not. And so I've paired all that knowledge that I've gained over the 8 years, eight plus years, actually, it's almost 9 years now. And I've paired that with the sensibility of my family, to your point, where, you know, you got to get family, you got to get food on the table. You want to get it on there. You want to get it there quick and not too expensive. And so I've taken how I grew up and that sensibility, and I've paired it with all that knowledge I have from working with the greatest chefs of the country, and produced 145 recipes that are for everyday people. But they're reinvented. So there's oftentimes they're a little bit healthier. Oftentimes they have just a really, really smart twist that nobody's thought of before. And I'm really, really, really excited to put this out in the world.
Yeah, I bet your grandma would be proud.
I would hope she would be.
All right. Well, I am very, I love this book. Congratulations. It was really fun talking to you. And thanks for putting all your heart and soul and intellect into this project. I think it's so interesting. You know, every year the cookbook culture just grows. And it's because of people like you who are just, you know, thinking about how do we make this fresh? And it needs to be fresh. Otherwise we get bored. So I thank you for that.
Oh, and I thank you.
All right. Thank you. That was Justin Chappell. We're talking about his book, Just Cook It. Very fun. And I put a bunch of links on that. I'll give you the little link to that when we get off, when we come back, rather. Till then, you got any questions for me for the Ask Me Anything at the end of the show? Text me, 81807. I got a question about the best way to buy fresh fish. I'm going to answer that at the end of the show. You got any questions that you want to chime in with? Text us, 81807. Oh, Dara here. All right, so we've got the new website up. It's up and going. So here's what. I don't know. I think you're still going to have to go through my Facebook page. I'm trying to figure this out. No, nope, you just got to go. Dara.grumdahl. That's where I am. Or you can try wcco.radio.com/menu. But no one's going to remember that. That's too many things. So just try Dara.grumdahl and it'll get you there. Or if you can, wcco.radio.com/menu. And it'll take you to these chicken leg quarters, which are really a beautiful collection of recipes. Okay, here's the situation. All of us hipster cooks, yeah, I'm roping you into that because you're listening to a cooking show. That's you. The chicken thigh thing, it's gotten out of the bag. People know now that the chicken thighs are more delicious than the chicken breasts. The message has been received. And so suddenly, chicken thighs used to be so inexpensive. They are now expensive. We did this. But lo and behold, there's still a bunch of people that haven't figured out. You can just get the whole chicken quarter of the thigh and the leg together. That apparently is too much for people. And it's now one of the cheapest cuts in the case. So I thought, let's do this. Let's just only talk about those chicken leg quarters. They're very nice to make for families because kids like to eat drumsticks. They're very nice for our wallets. And there's like so many good ways to make them. So we have two guests on the show. We've got Justin Chapel, and later on we're going to be talking to Jennifer Siegel. And so I put like half and half of their top five recipes. So the top five is going to be half of one, half of the other. You can go see what they do, see if you like their cooking style. And then if you do, go get their book. There. You can taste the rainbow. All right. So here's what we got. Number five. Of course, you're like, how could you split it in half? There's top five recipes. Well, my workaround is that the lovely Jennifer Siegel put up a recipe, her updated version of the Silver Palette Cookbook's Chicken Marbella. Have you ever had the Silver Palette's Chicken Marbella? It is good. It's like prunes and green olives and chicken. And you think like, oh, that sounds kind of terrible. But it's not. It's delicious. And it's kind of sweet and salty. And it was huge in New York in the 80s and 90s. Everybody's always making Chicken Marbella. And you should make it too. So I've got a link to that. That's my number five this week. The Silver Palette Chicken Marbella brought back. All right, what's my number four? My number four is Jen Siegel's sweet and spicy roast chicken with dates, pistachios, carrots. I like everything about the dates, your carrots, your make a citrus marinade and your chicken quarters. Throw the whole thing into a plastic bag, a Ziploc or something. Let it marinate overnight. So there's all do ahead. And the next day, you just dump the whole thing into a roasting pan. Then you roast it. Now you look like $1 million. That's an easy way to cook. I like it. You could have people over, and then all you're doing is just roasting stuff you did yesterday. That's the key to living good, living well. And then I thought, oh, some of you are going to want to be grilling, even if there's snow still everywhere, right? You're out there, you're grilling. Put together a little jerk, Jen Siegel's jerk chicken recipe. I've got a link to that. So you get a little Caribbean staycation for yourself. You're going to make up a little jerk marinade, slather it on some chicken, mix up a pitcher of limeade or maybe a couple Dark and Stormies. You're having a Caribbean vacation on your deck. That's what you're going to do. Maybe you'll have some Caribbean leftovers at your desk on Monday and people come by and you like snap your fingers over your head and you'll be like, I'm still on my staycation and I'll get you that email. Do you see yourself doing that? Could be. All right, here's my number two. Oh, we're all the way up to number two here on our top five recipes. So from the lovely Justin Chapel, who we just talked to, a roast chicken, peppers, and sausage. So, you know, an Italian-American street fair where you get that great big old grill and you're frying up the peppers and your sausage, chicken, everything's up there. Do that, but in your oven. Why not? I love this. All right, and then my number one, I was trying to figure out what to do. I picked Justin's chicken roasted on bread with caper berries. And this is kind of a good example of how hard it is to make a new recipe and then how satisfying it is when it happens. So caper berries, if capers grow up, they become caper berries, right? That's their plan. They're not going to stay those tiny little buds. They're going to turn into berries. They didn't used to be in grocery stores 20 years ago, but now they're everywhere. So that's a very definition of why you have a new recipe, because suddenly they're around. I see them in salad bars all the time, or you can get them jars. But if you're just walking by Whole Foods, they always have a little pocket of them because they're pickled and they taste good and they last for a long time. Sometimes they're in the olive bar, but you'll find them. Anyway, so you're going to just take some chicken quarters, put some bread down in the pan, they'll tear up some chunky bread or just put slices down if that's you've just got bread slices around. And your chicken is going to drain into the pan and make stuffing like just that second, and you have some charred lemons in there. This is a good recipe. It's my number one, and it is up. These are all up. You can find them. Easiest way is still going to be via my Facebook page, Dara.Grumdahl. And then you'll see the links, and we're going to be gussying up this this website over the weeks to come. So I'm excited about that. Maybe get some restaurant reviews up there. I'm not sure. You got any thoughts? Always let me know. Good way to find me is on the Twitter bot. I am at Dear Dara. When we come back, we are going to be talking to Jen Siegel of the very, very popular Once Upon a Chef blog. And we're going to find out more about keeping foods kind of fresh and new, how you do that in the year 2018 when we come back. Dara here. Yes, I'm the happiest person in the state because I got to put my jean jacket on today. And I love my winter coat. I'm kind of sick of it. I don't want to see it for a while, a long while. I'm going to take it to the dry cleaner even. It's going to go on a trip without me. It's going to get some coffee off the sleeve. I got plans. I'm so happy. I can't even tell you how happy I was to put on a jean jacket. Like, I think about it and I just feel happy inside. And that's what life's about. It's about the little things. The little things that make you happy. Okay, so here's a story. Once upon a time, Jen Siegel went to culinary school and she worked in fancy restaurants where they have the mise en place all kind of organized in front of you and people come in and they want to be treated like a king and a queen. Then she got married, she had a couple of kids, and then she started this blog called Once Upon a Chef. It's very, very popular, and it combines her chef skills that she knew from restaurant life with, you know, life in the house where people are constantly bringing you crayons that melted somehow onto their precious brownie sash. So today she has her first cookbook. It is called the Once Upon a Chef Cookbook, 100 Tested, Perfected, and Family-Approved Recipes. And she is in Potomac, Maryland, where she's taken time out of her weekend to talk to us. Jen Siegel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
I am so glad to be here. All right. So I don't know where to start. Part of me just wants to just dive in and just be like, where is it easier to cook? Is it easier to cook in a restaurant where, you know, there's giant flashing knives and people are having nervous breakdowns? Or is it easier to cook at home where people are constantly like, oh, no, I spilled slime on my favorite bear. Do something immediately.
I think it's easier to cook at home, for sure.
All right, so let's tell me about your growing up. Tell me how was it with you growing up? Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Reston, Virginia, which is in the Washington D.C. area. And funny enough, my mother never cooked. She does not like to cook. She always thought of cooking as a chore. So I did not grow up in the kitchen.
How did you live?
Well, I mean, I shouldn't say she never cooked. She cooked only, you know, because she had to, and she cooked really basic things, and we brought in a lot. My mom was an entrepreneur, and so she worked long hours, so food just was never really a focus for us growing up.
So she'd get it from the, like, takeout from the grocery store? Or?
Yeah, you know, we'd order in. We had a lot of Chinese food.
Nice.
Yeah, she, you know, it's funny, she wasn't a bad cook. She just didn't like doing it.
Yeah, I have a friend's mom who very adamantly felt that cooking was sort of a thing that women should have jettisoned. Like, once we were liberated, yeah, we should be done. And
yeah,
I don't live like that, but I certainly get it.
Yeah, well, and I think especially, I mean, gosh, I was raised in the 70s. I was born in the 1970s. And my mom was in that first generation of women. She was sort of like that superwoman who, you know, that supermom who did it all. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, she did think of cooking as something that, you know, maybe women shouldn't have to do anymore. Or, you know, I think she really sort of resented the fact that she, you know, that was falling on her shoulders always every night. So,
yeah, you know, it takes a ton of time. If that's not your bag, I totally get that. But so it makes sense that after growing up that way, that you kind of thought, oh, you know what cooking is? It's a profession. It's a profession for professionals.
Yeah. Well, you know, I actually became interested in cooking when I was in college. I studied abroad in France and I lived with a French family and I didn't speak a lick of French. And so I used to spend a lot of time in the kitchen with my host mother who loved to cook. And I started to pick it up and become interested in it, you know, as I was learning the language. And I was so passionate about it. I actually went back to France the following summer and I worked as an au pair and again lived with a French family. and, you know, learned more about French cooking. And so pretty much as soon as I graduated college, I enrolled in culinary school.
And then, so you, it seems like you really took to it.
I did. I loved it.
Yeah. Is it the kind of one of the things that I used to be a restaurant cook. I don't know if I could even ever dare to call myself a chef, but one of the things I loved about it was you kind of start in the morning and you make something. Like, I love that process of making a concrete thing that you can see and celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing that I always liked about it is that when you were done for the day, you were done. You know, you don't take any stress home with you. It's really stressful when you're there, but you know, when your shift is over, you're done and you just start over the next day. But you didn't have like that, oh, I've got to do this when I get home, or and I always liked that piece of it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like that anymore because now everybody's got to email, you know, you got to email your orders in, and there's so much more computer work. But I like that too. It's like you couldn't take, you know, a swordfish back with you. Like, you had to get it, had to get it done and put it away, and that was the end of the story. And so you really liked that, and then you did what all of us do. I've got two kids myself. You went and had a couple kids.
Yeah, and then at that point, you know, I couldn't work the long hours and weekends anymore. And I really wanted to be home with the kids. So I stayed home with them for a couple years and I wasn't working. But after a while, I got a little bit bored. You know, I was starting to get the itch to go back to work. And that's when I decided basically to start my blog, you know, and it was sort of a way for me to still do what I loved, but, you know, I could do it from home.
Yeah, you were kind of in that first wave of the blogging, right, where the blogs were getting big, there was a ton of networking. What was it like to get that all off the ground?
Well, to be honest, I actually think I missed the first wave. I was a little bit later than that first wave of blogs. And in fact, I remember at the time I really wanted to write a cookbook, and I started to put feelers out and I realized I had no chance of getting published as an unknown. And my little sister, who's like much hipper than I am, she was like, you should start a cooking blog. And I was like, what's a cooking blog? I had no idea even what it was. But she sent me a few links and I checked out some of the popular blogs and I thought, oh, I can do that, you know? But because a lot of the bloggers at that time were much younger than I was and didn't have children, and you know, because I had kids, I never really was in that whole networking with other bloggers thing, going to conferences and all that. I never did that.
Oh, because that was like a big thing for a while. And it now kind of feels like it's over maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a lot of time where corporations were thinking like, this is the future of everything and we're going to pay influencers to make biscuits or whatever. And then
Right. Yeah, I sort of missed out on that, and I've just focused on, I don't work with any brands. I've just focused on building my site, you know, with trying to raise my kids at the same time.
And how has that been?
It's been great. I feel really lucky, you know, especially coming from the restaurant world where, you know, long hours are just expected. So I feel so lucky to be able to work from home and to do what I love. It took a long time to get to this point where I could actually make this a job. For years, I didn't earn a dime, and my husband actually jokingly called it my public service. but it's finally grown to the point where, you know, it's a job, and I can do it from home, and I'm very, very grateful for that.
And is it hard to accept the limitations of a home kitchen coming from fancy restaurant kitchen?
Not really, because, you know, I'm cooking different types of food, and, you know, so the hardest thing is just having, you know, you have to do everything yourself. Like, I don't have dishwashers, being a food blogger is, you know, it's a one woman show. I do everything from the cooking to the dishes, to the photography, the writing, the technology piece of it. So that's been a bit of a challenge, is just learning so many different things that go along with it. But I don't miss restaurant kitchens.
Yeah, your photography is beautiful. You've obviously learned a lot about lighting and...
Oh, thank you. It's been a journey. I look back at my photographs from the beginning and I want to cringe.
Oh, no. Well, they look great now. There's a beautiful photo on the cover of your book, which is a very simple salad, but it just is kind of a great example. So you take a container of those heirloom baby tomatoes, the way I see them all the time now. They're very sweet. But the way that you cut them all into quarters, and they suddenly go from just looking like the thing on the shelf to something that, maybe Alice Waters would serve.
Right. Well, I can't take credit for the photos in the book. I worked with a really wonderful food photographer, Alexandra Grabluski, out of New York, and we had a food stylist, so I cannot take the credit for the photos.
Oh, yeah.
In the book. Yeah.
But you can take credit for the technique. So you have a bunch, that's your bag, right? You take restaurant techniques and just kind of, strip them away so that things are very simple.
That's what I try to do. I really try to make restaurant-level cooking accessible for home cooks. That's always the goal, and just making it easy. I think there are so many wonderful, easy recipes out there. It's just a matter of creating a collection of them, so that you can eat that type of food without spending, that kind of money or that kind of time. It's that kind of cooking can sometimes be very time-consuming, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, I think the salad is a great example, because just the very act of kind of cutting the tomatoes in a nice way doesn't take a ton of time. All you need is a paring knife, right?
Right. Yeah, it's so easy.
And then you just take you could take a store-bought pesto, and, you're just basically, putting together, what we're kind of familiar with from restaurants is fancy, like heirloom tomatoes and a little pesto and then some burrata. But it you can do it at home.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many things that you can do at home that are really easy. And sometimes you just need the inspiration, or the idea. And that's sort of what I try to do on my site and in the book.
Yeah, we put up a link to some of the things on your website, at Once Upon a Chef, the chicken quarter recipes, because they're so baking a chicken on a weeknight, like that's the essence of family life a lot of the time, right? You just kind of...
I know. The chicken, the dreaded chicken dinner.
Well, I love the dreaded chicken dinner, but you got,
I do too. And I joke in the book, I have, I love chicken and I make it all the time, but we have this running joke in my family that whenever I say we're having chicken for dinner, my husband says chicken again. And then he rattles off a list, a mile long of all the chicken dinners his mother used to make.
Oh.
Yeah. But I mean, it's true. We all make a lot of chicken, and you got to find a way to make it good.
Yeah. Because you need to get it in the pan, and then you need to, gather everybody around the table. I had dinner with my kids last night. I got so much good information about what happened with the air-powered cars at the sixth grade end of the air-powered car unit.
Right. And yeah, when everybody sits down, it's hard to do every night. But when it happens, it's always great family time.
Yeah. How big are your kids now?
So I have a 13-year-old daughter and a 14-year-old son.
Oh, yeah. So you've been, I bet the recipe testing, they have eaten a lot of tested recipes as this has gone along.
They have, yeah. I don't know how much they enjoy being testers, but but they have.
Oh, everybody, I find that, teenagers, they object to it all when it's happening, and then they remember it fondly. Or that's what we tell ourselves. All right. Well, Jen Siegel, I love your book, Once Upon a Chef. It's been fun talking to you. It's very, love that you're kind of bringing all your intelligence and ambition to simplifying food. Like, that's such a noble pursuit.
Thank you.
All right. So I have a link to the recipe, Jen Siegel from Once Upon a Chef. Thank you so much and congratulations.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay. When we come back, we're going to answer some of your questions. You got anything? You can text me 81807. All right. So I got a question looking for those, not a fun road trip thing to do. Well, how about next weekend, Bluefin Bay, the big food and wine weekend at Bluefin Bay? I love that. It's not like a spring getaway, but I don't even know where can we drive to right now that doesn't have snow. You got to still just keep embracing the winter. So they do all of these different wine tastings, and you get a room with a jacuzzi up there. It's just look out at Lake Superior. I truly think that that little sliver of the Northland, that's one of the most beautiful places in the country. So Bluefin Bay, I think it starts, that big food and wine thing, it starts on Friday, goes through the weekend. You know, I think you can find it's the Bluefin Bay Resort. If you haven't ever been there, it's an amazing place. And those food and wine weekends are really special. They have a chef I've never tasted his food. It's Stephen Schultz from the Toasted Frog. Anyone been to the Toasted Frog in Fargo? All right, so that's a good one. Oh, I got a question of the best place to buy fresh fish. We're a little bit of a fish war lately. I would say it's between Almanac Fish, right at the head of the farmer's market in downtown St. Paul, or Coastal Seafoods in South Minneapolis. Though a lot of the grocery stores have really great stuff. Kowalski's does. I would say, but if you really want, you know, go to Almanac or go to Coastal. Go to Lund's and Kowalski's, though. They have really upped their game in the last couple of years. It's quite excellent. So a lot of good places. All right, next week, I've got the local greenhouse greens growers, Reval. I have a lot of questions about how these newfangled greenhouses work. How do they get, you know, tomatoes and everything to grow in the Minnesota snow? Is it the energy part of it? You're really curious about it. So we're going to find out all about that next week. Till then, I hope you have a just wonderful, wonderful, tasty week, and I will see you here next week on Off the Menu.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.